From New York to Washington, North Carolina to New Mexico, this is American Radio Journal. On this edition, the federal government has relaxed or removed thousands of regulations to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic. Dr. Josh Umber of AtlasMD is here to tell us why that regulatory relief should be made permanent. The 2020 presidential race has been pushed off the front pages by coronavirus, but the resumption of Trump rallies signals a return to the campaign trail. Scott Parkinson of the Club for Growth has the real story. Support is growing to recognize Juneteenth as an official holiday. Eric Boehm and Zuri Davis of Reason Magazine discuss why conservatives should embrace the idea. And as the saying goes, man plans and God laughs. On this week's American Radio Journal commentary, Colonel Frank Ryan, USMC retired, says it is clear that God is in control. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to American Radio Journal. As the coronavirus pandemic swept across the nation, federal and state governments relaxed or suspended regulations so the healthcare system could move swiftly to deal with the crisis. Dr. Josh Umber of AtlasMD says that proves those regulations were not needed and the changes should be made permanent. Josh, welcome to American Radio Journal. Doctor, as we have worked our way as a nation through this COVID-19 pandemic, one thing we have seen is the federal government repeatedly either suspending or eliminating regulations in order to move along treatment, to move along, hopefully, the development of a vaccine. Tell us a little bit about the regulations that have been relaxed. What do you see as a major advancement in that area?
I think one really interesting change is telemedicine rules. For the last decade and a half, they've said telemedicine in terms of phone calls, text messages, emails, video chat, those were off limits. Those are too insecure to manage patient care. And I think that was detrimental. Patients had to wait longer to access their doctors, insurance wouldn't pay for it, all these sort of things that negatively affected patients. But now suddenly in a crisis, we can, with the stroke of a pen, waive all that. It's suddenly secure enough, and it's great. So as frustrating as that was for 10 years that they held back innovation, it's at least all happening very quickly that they're saying that this is a great way for patients to get cost-effective care. It's helping with shortages because now doctors can manage patients from anywhere in their state, or if they're licensed in multiple states, especially mental health, the anxiety, depression, alcohol abuse that comes with a pandemic like this requires access to professionals that are in short supply. And now they can reach out further, faster, without necessarily requiring an office visit. So that, in one instance, is a very interesting way that pulling back government regulation has been beneficial.
These regulations that have been pulled back, Josh, are they temporary rollbacks or is this going to be a permanent situation?
I think we've yet to see that final answer. My talkings with different physicians from across the country, they've heard that insurance changed billing and said, okay, we'll pay for full office rates for the telemedicine visits, but really only because the clinics were struggling to even keep their doors open because volume went down so much. And some insurance companies are saying that they're going to revert back to the previous undervalued pricing, either July 1st or August 1st, depending on the scope of the infection. That'll be a huge problem. I think the government is going to be slower to act. I don't think they have as much appetite for rolling these back. In the sense, Medicare patients have responded very well to this, and that's keeping them at home. And they're going to be the most at-risk population for a much longer time. So I think they're going to see that pressure from those residents to say, I still want to be able to access my doctor this way. Don't suddenly take that away from me. So the legality will be one part, but the financial model might be another piece to the puzzle.
Let's talk for a minute about the FDA, the Federal Drug Administration. The big push now, of course, is to come up with a vaccine for the coronavirus. We have seen that the FDA is removing a lot of barriers, speeding up timetables. Do you see this as a good thing? And does this sort of indicate that maybe those regulatory hurdles and timetables were not really necessary to begin with?
First principles thinking would tell us that we probably can get to the heart of the matter much faster than we have. For instance, I went to med school with a gentleman whose dad was the lead researcher for Allegra, and it took two semis of file boxes for them to go through the FDA approval process. It's important. We want to take time. We want to be smart with new science, new medicine. But at the same time, we don't want to slow that down. And I think just wartime style effort, we realize just how fast we can move when we need to. We can put a man on the moon faster than we can regulate most medications. And they realize that there's too much of a need for this. Let's find out where there's waste and remove that. And the government's full of waste. You know, the bureaucratic answer to a red tape problem, you know, tends to be more red tape. And long term, I think we're all hoping that this allows us to get medications into the system in a smart way, a safe way, but a much more cost-effective way, a faster, more efficient process for patients who have a high need.
Another avenue are so-called right-to-try laws, right-to-try legislation. Where does that stand, and what do we mean by that term?
The right-to-try legislation gave drug manufacturers and terminal patients the ability to go ahead and try a medicine that has otherwise not been approved. A lot of times these are cases where there's just not enough patients to do the same 10,000 patient study type model. There might only be 100 people with that disease. And if they're already dying because the medications that are available aren't working, then why would we hold someone back from trying a new medicine in the last few months of their life if that might advance the cause? And that's been incredibly helpful for people, because some of these medicines are life-saving. And if we can help the sickest people at the final stages of a disease process, that bodes very well for being able to help healthier people earlier in the process to, you know, roll back cancers. And now the approval process, the regulatory burden, means that these medications won't have to be nearly as expensive because there weren't as many hoops to jump through. Now that the FDA is seeing that in COVID, we're getting to do not one test, but 100 tests all at the same time, so that we find the best answer in the shortest amount of time.
We have been talking with Dr. Josh Umber, who is founder of AtlasMD. Doctor, tell us a bit about AtlasMD and where can folks go to learn more?
They can go to atlas.md/Wichita. to learn more about our model of direct care, or they can go to atlas.md/map, M-A-P, to find a doctor like us in their area. We are what we call direct care. We are a flat membership-based type model, so $10 a month for kids, $50 a month for adults, for unlimited care.
Dr. Josh Umber, founder of AtlasMD. Josh, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. He, of course, keeps an eye on Congress for us, also all things political. So today we're going to talk about the biggest political thing of all, the race for president of the United States. Scott, good to have you here.
It's always great to be with you, Loman. Thanks for having me back.
We haven't really talked much about the presidential race in recent weeks, really months, Scott, because so much else has been happening. However, the Trump rallies are back on the radar screen, and it would appear that we're now starting to pay attention. So what do all these rallies mean? Is this an opportunity for the president to start changing the narrative a bit?
Yeah, I certainly think it is. The administration has, for several months, been dealing with the coronavirus pandemic. And as a result, they've not been able to be out hosting these large rallies that Trump really excels in. And so this is an opportunity for President Trump to once again begin to rebuild that enthusiasm of his base of support. And I think that that's telling in terms of what's happening in Tulsa, because a lot of people are really interested in going down there and supporting him for this rally. And That's just by the number of RSVPs that we've seen, as many as 1 million people requested tickets. And I know that that's obviously people from all over the country that were willing to travel and hear President Trump hold his first major rally since the coronavirus pandemic hit. So it's pretty exciting time for the campaign season. This is obviously a campaign cycle that's been unlike any other in our nation's history. Normally at this point, you're looking at a de facto nominee, and we have that with Joe Biden, but where is Joe Biden? Joe Biden really hasn't been out in public in about 80 days, and he occasionally pops up in his basement, and you know he'll go to one or two events here and there with his mask, his black mask, and his dark sunglasses. But for the most part, the messaging has been limited off the campaign trail and through the box of a television, watching Joe Biden do interviews with MSNBC and CNN.
What does it say about the state of the presidential race here, Scott? We do have national polling that is showing Biden with a lead, but you've had the president out there day after day dealing with the coronavirus pandemic, dealing with the riots and the unrest that has been sweeping across the nation for the last couple of weeks. So while the president's dealing with all these thorny issues, as you mentioned, Joe Biden's sitting in his basement, is this really playing to his advantage that so far he's been able to really essentially hide from the campaign trail?
Yeah, as I watch this from afar, there's a couple of key points to keep in mind. Yes, President Trump's approval rating has sagged a little bit since George Floyd's murder, but at the same time, we've seen this national polling showing Joe Biden with as much as a double-digit lead. But last time I checked, we don't have a national popular vote in America. We have an electoral college. So the real focus needs to be on the battleground states, and President Trump certainly is trying to put additional states in play. He's trying to maintain the strong support that he had in 2016 when he shocked the world by defeating Hillary Clinton, who was the heir apparent to Barack Obama. I also think that President Trump, and we're seeing this through his messaging, he certainly believes that there's a silent majority that doesn't want to take to social media, that doesn't want to answer phone calls from national pollsters. And, you know, that silent majority did show up for him in 2016. So what does the silent majority look like in the 2020 presidential election? It might even be bigger. You know, I think that there are a lot of folks that didn't take President Trump very seriously. But when we look at polling, you can ask Americans, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? Overwhelmingly, the result among Republicans and Democrats is that they are personally better off. Now, if you ask them, do you think that the Trump economy is better than the Obama economy, then you're going to get back to a partisan breakdown of Republicans and Democrats or liberals and conservatives. So that'll be closer to 50-50 based on the party line vote. So as I kind of just look for key indicators heading into November, the enthusiasm behind those that actually do support President Trump, what does it look like in your state of Pennsylvania, which I still firmly believe is going to be the deciding factor for the 2020 race. And then we also have key states like Wisconsin and Michigan. I know President Trump is interested in adding states like New Hampshire and Minnesota to his side of the map. He's making a play for New Mexico and Nevada and Colorado. But it's going to be those local communities, not the urban communities, that come out in a big, big way. And what happens with suburban voters that feel threatened by the security of their communities? Obviously, what's happening across America with law and order is going to be a campaign issue. And for those that want to minimize the impact that the police have on our communities in a positive way, I think they are selling themselves short of really how much people value the folks that we went to school with, that are risking their lives for our children's safety within schools, risking their lives for the safety of communities that are threatened by gang violence. This isn't just an issue in the suburbs. This is an issue everywhere. And I think that folks will step up and ultimately support those men and women that serve in uniform.
How much does it matter, Scott, that you have really two different visions of America going here. You have President Trump moving forward with rallies. You have President Trump planning to hold a Republican National Convention as usual. And then on the other side, you have Joe Biden with his mask, coddling up to the shutdown state governors, wanting to do things virtually. There appears to be sort of a malaise factor, similar to what we had in the Carter administration, surrounding Biden versus the president's optimism. Does that sort of overarching message, is that something that's really going to animate the electorate as we head into the fall?
Well, let me say this. I think the people that are surrounding Joe Biden are smart people, and they know that he is going to continue to improve his standing for the presidential race as long as he's locked up in his own basement. If Joe Biden is out there fully campaigning, he's much more prone to the gaps that we've seen throughout his entire career, not just over the last few years. But Joe Biden has been gaffe-prone for almost 40 years, and I think that they want to make this race about Donald Trump, not about Joe Biden, and that's why we're not really seeing Biden out there much on the presidential trail.
We have been talking with Scott Parkinson from the Club for Growth. And Scott, tell us a bit about the club.
The Club for Growth is a membership organization based out of Washington, D.C. We're united in economic freedom and economic liberty. And if your listeners are interested in checking us out, our website is clubforgrowth.org. And the Twitter handle is at Club for Growth with the number 4.
Scott Parkinson of the Club for Growth. Scott, we'll check in with you again next week. Thank you.
Thanks.
Juneteenth is a celebration of the end of slavery in the United States. Eric Boehm and Zuri Davis of Reason Magazine are here to discuss why conservatives should embrace the call to make it an official holiday.
On June 19, 1865, a Union general, Gordon Granger, and his troops arrived in Galveston, Texas. The Civil War was over by then, but General Granger had been dispatched to Galveston to read Federal Order No. 3. It was a proclamation freeing the remaining slaves in the state of Texas. More than 2 years after President Abraham Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation, the slaves in Galveston were among the last in the Americas to hear the news that they were now free. That date, June 19th, became a holiday for the freed slaves, and it has continued to be celebrated, particularly by Black Americans, ever since. Maybe you've never heard of it, or maybe you've just become aware of it recently, or maybe you've been celebrating for years. But today, that's what we're going to take a look at, a closer look at Juneteenth, the holiday which is, at its core, a celebration of American freedom. Hi, folks. I'm Eric Boehm with Reason Magazine. Thanks for joining us on this edition of American Radio Journal. My guest today is Zuri Davis. She is an assistant editor at Reason, a colleague of mine, and the author of a piece that you can find right now over at Reason.com titled Juneteenth, America's Other Independence Day is the Holiday We Need Right Now. Zuri, thank you so much for taking some time and joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I covered a little bit of the history there, Zuri, but fill us in on the modern flavor of Juneteenth. What is this holiday all about?
You pretty much explained it very well earlier, but just to give a little bit more background, Juneteenth, it was a day of celebration, and those celebrations have since lived on. Though there are various cities in this country that still actually observe Juneteenth, so they'll have parades, they'll have cookouts, historical storytelling. For example, in Nashville last year, I had the honor of going to an amazing event that was held right in front of the fort that we have here, Fort Negley. And we had some reenactors, and they were actually descendants of Black Union soldiers. We had some kids from like a nonprofit, and they had these giant puppets, and they were talking about the history of Black Nashville. We had like food vendors, artists, all of that. So that's pretty much what you can expect if you ever show up to a Juneteenth celebration. So it's first and foremost, obviously, a day of independence, but it's secondarily a day to showcase Black culture and Black history.
You know, I love that it sort of combines that understanding of history with a celebration of the depth and the color of Black culture in America today. But what I really, really love about Juneteenth is that it is, as I said, it's ultimately about freedom. Of course, all Americans know about the 4th of July and about the Declaration of Independence, that seminal moment when the United States is born, with its foundation resting on the idea that individuals are free to pursue liberty as they choose. But of course, it was an imperfect concept of freedom at that time in 1776, because there were so many people who couldn't be part of it. And Juneteenth coming at the end of the Civil War, with all of the slaves now being freed, it seems in some ways like the other bookend to that story of American freedom that begins on the 4th of July.
Yes. A lot of people will commemorate Juneteenth by quoting Frederick Douglass's What to the Slave Means the 4th of July speech. So basically in that speech, Frederick Douglass points out the hypocrisies of his day, how white Americans celebrate this wonderful day of independence, of freedom, while slavery exists, you know? So obviously, there's some contrast between the celebration and what was actually going on in the country. So while slavery has obviously since ended, and we've even state-sponsored segregation has also ended, there's still ways that we see kind of this two Americas. So in our criminal justice system, for example, Black Americans are disproportionately represented in the criminal justice system. They get longer sentences for similar crimes. We think about crack cocaine sentencing versus powder cocaine sentencing, for example, the fact that there's such a disparity, even though the substances are very similar in their chemical makeup. You think about the death penalty, how Black Americans are disproportionately represented on death row, and how a lot of cases involve white victims of murder, even though white Americans only make up half of the murder rate. So there are just different institutions that Black Americans especially still see that disconnect. So that's why a lot of us think that Juneteenth is still very much relevant, kind of in that spirit of Frederick Douglass's speech.
Yeah, we are very much still working towards the ideals that were set out in the founding and the ideals that were written and spoken about so eloquently by people like Frederick Douglass. We are talking with Zuri Davis. She's a colleague of mine at Reason Magazine, and she's the author of a piece about the importance of Juneteenth. That's the holiday celebrated on June 19th every year. Not just important as a historical memory, but as part of the culture today. Zuri, just about a minute left here, and I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about how you see Juneteenth fitting into this ongoing conversation that we're having this spring and summer in particular about race and racial discrimination in America, and how it still continues even today.
Yeah, so definitely with all of the cultural conversations going on and the protests and just examples of police brutality, that is very much part of the conversation. Also, I've seen a lot of people thinking about some of our symbols and our statues, regardless of what side of the issue you come down on that in terms of removal. Lots of people on both Republicans, Democrats, and also on the Libertarian side, they're definitely starting to have these conversations of what reconciliation actually means and just how to address some of those disparities.
It is a holiday that celebrates freedom, and I think a holiday that also challenges us, and I mean all of us, white, black, and every other color of American, to live up to those ideals of freedom and respect for individual humanity that's not based on the color of anyone's skin. An important holiday, one that even if you don't celebrate it, one that you should certainly know about. That is all the time we have, unfortunately, for today. Zuri, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And again, check out Zuri's piece. You can find that at Reason Magazine, reason.com. It's titled Juneteenth, America's Other Independence Day is the Holiday We Need Right Now. Again, that's Zuri Davis, assistant editor at Reason. I'm Eric Boehm. You can catch me right back here next week on another edition of American Radio Journal.
During a walk across America, Colonel Frank Ryan, USMC retired, found a deeper faith, which during the COVID-19 pandemic helped him to understand that God is in control. He talks about it on this American Radio Journal commentary.
Since the beginning of the panic of 2020, the sheer magnitude of the change in our lives has been extraordinary. The emotional roller coaster of the transition from a booming economy to one on the brink of economic disaster has been nothing short of mind-numbing. The U.S. economy went from 3.5% unemployment rate in February 2020 to over 14.7% less than 60 days later. It was the sharpest increase in the unemployment rate since the Great Depression. In much the same way, the nation was equally as shocked when Donald Trump was elected president in 2016. I remember that night so clearly, because only day before, the political pundits were predicting a massive landslide for Hillary Clinton. Virtually every commentator's attempt to dismiss the election results and to point the finger at collusion, Russian interference, social media interference, or a myriad of other suspected causes, failed to consider the most important aspect, which is the hand of God or divine providence. In fact, I would suspect any commentator who would have thought such a thing would be reluctant to say it in our secular society. With the panic of 2020, the pandemic or COVID-19, it is significantly more challenging to dismiss its causes, despite efforts of so many to do so. While many are bewildered, people of faith are not. In 2014, I walked across the United States to raise awareness of the needs of children with emotional and behavioral issues and with developmental disabilities. During my journey of over 140 days, I experienced a faith reawakening, which I realized, even though I conceptually understood it, that God really was in control. I just had to accept it, to believe, and to have faith. In life, I do not always understand why things happen the way they do, but candidly, it's not important that I do. It is much more important that I stay grounded in my faith and put my trust in my Savior. People who are not of faith may find this concept incredibly difficult to understand. It must be hard to not be able to see the guiding hand of God in all that happens in life. I began my walk across the United States as a walk of atonement and a walk of gratitude. Then one day prior to my walk, a person asked me if I would dedicate the walk to help children with disabilities, a cause for which I have tremendous passion. I said I would. I did not understand until much later that it was this hand of God that brought us together, because that simple question and my response changed my life forever. We may never fully understand why challenges are placed before us the way that they are. In truth, it's not important that we understand. However, it is important that we accept those challenges and deal with them. I would certainly prefer the comfort of the financial systems in place prior to the panic of 2020, but I cannot change that. I can accept it, I can deal with it, I can pray about it, or I can attempt to fight it. No amount of fighting the pandemic or its initial aftermath will solve the problem, however. Only by accepting reality, and in my case, seeking inspiration and guidance from the Holy Spirit, will we be able to handle this crisis. I realize that for me, God is in control. Others will attempt to deal with the issue and challenges in their own way and may feel that they are actually the ones in control. I do not know why the panic of 2020 occurred. I do know that it caused all of us to question the role of government, to challenge the power of the governors, to question those in leadership positions, to question our own stamina and ability to deal with such adversity. Perhaps that is what the panic is intended to have us do. Perhaps the panic of 2020 will be the opportunity for us to value our families from whom we may have been separated due to the quarantine. Perhaps those of us who attended church on a regular basis may find that we missed it when we were not able to attend, and thereby strengthens our resolve to attend. There is a possibility that many people will no longer take for granted things that we used to take for granted. We may all find that the little things in life, those things that seem to be so trivial, were perhaps the things that we should have focused on to begin with. Each person will learn something different from this experience. Despite all the plans that we have made and are making, it is possible that we may realize that as a result of the panic of 2020, many of those decisions and plans are not within our control. Perhaps God has something else in store for us. Perhaps we must keep an open mind to see what He really wants us to see, to do what He wants us to do, and act the way He wants us to act. For the American Radio Journal, this is Frank Ryan.
American Radio Journal is heard on public affairs-minded radio stations all across the country, including our newest affiliate, KBZN-FM in Salt Lake City, Utah. Welcome to our new listeners in the Beehive State. American Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, which underwrite the costs of this program. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. Learn more about American Radio Journal and hear expanded versions of some interviews aired on this program. Please visit our website, AmericanRadioJournal.com. I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to American Radio Journal. American Radio Journal, lighting the brush fires of freedom.